Happy Monday, everyone. It is time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, December 9th, 2019. I'm reading to you from the studio located at Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. My name is Cindy. I'm glad you're listening, and we'll start with a look at today's weather and then the headlines from the front page. Our weather is kind of changing today, I think. A high of 28, a low of 8. I expect snow before noon, with wind chills as low as 5 below. We have two new stories on the front page and one repeat since it's a skinny Monday. The first is about a time for angels, and the second one is about the Fort Dodge High Band paying tribute, and then a Hometown Pride repeat article about giving back. Okay, we'll start with the time for angels. Loved ones remember those lost at a special service Sunday. I can feel a sneeze coming on, so that's going to happen in a minute, people. So be ready. Dozens of Fort Dodge area families came together with a shared grief Sunday afternoon for a time for angel service of remembrance at St. Olaf Lutheran Church. A Time for Angels is an annual service hosted by Gunderson Funeral Home for area families to mourn and remember loved ones they've lost over the past year. This is the 21st year the service has been held. The winter holiday season is often a tough one for those who have lost loved ones, said Phil Gunderson, owner of Gunderson Funeral Home. Because of this, the funeral home decided to host this service. Give me a minute while I turn the page. To host this service of remembrance to help them through this time. Simply defined, angels are messengers and guardians of God's presence, Gunderson told the guests at the service. Angels are messengers of comfort, of joy, of courage, of hope. They are also messengers of blessings and freedom. The presence of angels is especially evident during the Christmas season, where we prepare for celebrating the birth of Christ. A series of 5 candles were lit while guests held illuminated electric votive candles. The candles represented the loss of different loved ones, children, parents and grandparents, brothers and sisters, soulmates and companions, and other special persons. Monsignor Kevin McEnvoy from Holy Trinity Catholic Parish and Reverend Dan Call of Grace Lutheran Church delivered scripture messages of faith, hope, and love in the face of grief. We grieve, we are lonely, but the journey continues, Kale said. As the names of hundreds of lost loved ones from over the past year were read, Gunderson Funeral Home staff handed out handmade angel keepsake ornaments. The ornaments are made by Chris Jondal and have a new design every year. Connie Umbaugh of Jewel attended the service with her sister. My father and my mother both passed away 2 years ago, and I just wanted to remember them at this time. Following the service, guests were invited to join in the fellowship hall for refreshments and to purchase additional angel ornaments. Angel ornaments will also be available at the Gunderson Funeral Home, 1615 North 15th, for $15. There's a picture of those 5 candles that I mentioned. There is a picture of Rob Gunderson lighting the candles in memory of the lost ones during the service. And on the front page is a picture of Monsignor Kevin McCoy delivering the scripture message during the service, as well as a picture of guests holding those electric votive candles. Next story, called Paying Tribute. Fort Dodge Senior High Band Orchestra performed for World War II 75th Anniversary event in Washington, D.C. There is a picture of the senior high students sitting in front of the Capitol, as well as a picture of their band leader. And the orchestra shows the orchestra director Brian Robeson leading the orchestra as they play at the Air Force Memorial. Washington, D.C. is a historic place to visit and can have a profound effect while admiring the monuments and soaking up history. The Fort Dodge Senior High Band and Orchestra programs were able to experience that feeling on a day that was built to honor those who have sacrificed and make sacrifices for our country. The groups performed on Veterans Day for the World War II 75th anniversary commemoration after being invited by historic programs. Senior head drum major Antavion Adams has made the trip to Washington, D.C. before, but this time it was a much different feeling. Although I had visited our nation's capital before, I definitely had the greatest takeaway from this trip, Adams said, from start to finish. It was an exciting adventure in learning where we came from as Americans and appreciating those who gave everything to protect our freedom. There was not nearly enough time to see everything available, but we were able to experience most of the renowned monuments and sites. We got to play under the arches of the Air Force Memorial and witness the time-honored changing of the guard at Arlington, both which were powerful and humbling experiences. Band director Al Paulson said over 140 people, including 120 students, made the trip and were able to see the memorials while playing in front of veterans. We received an invitation 2 years ago. We had to send them a video and a resume, and then we were selected, Paulson said. We saw the Korean War Memorial, the Lincoln Monument, and all of the war monuments. We were also able to visit the zoo, and on the last day, we visited Arlington. Everyone was excited to see all the monuments and the history they contained. They were able to meet and see the veterans from the previous wars. The kids were awesome and represented Fort Dodge with great honor. For junior drum major Josh Meyer, the trip was an exciting and humbling trip. It felt kind of weird that we would be chosen to play for such an important anniversary celebration. We're just a town in the middle of Iowa, Meyer said. We got to play in front of the Lincoln Memorial by the reflecting pool on one morning, and then we walked around the pool and played with other bands in front of the World War II Memorial. It was really cool to be able to honor the veterans at such historic places. We also got the chance to put on our Elvis show and some other tunes at the Air Force Memorial the next day. One of my favorite things that we saw was the Vietnam War Memorial Wall. We saw it on a guided tour past sunset. It was crazy that every single one of those names was someone who had fought for our country and lost their life in the process. Senior Nathaniel Madden, who is also a drum major, found the trip indescribable. Words can't even describe how it felt playing down in Washington, D.C., Madden said. It was such a privilege to be able to honor veterans in the way we did, but the best part for me was playing on the bottom of the Lincoln Memorial because it's just such a powerful place. Not only is the monument itself historic, but also so much has taken place there, such as Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. The band was also able to play at the World War II Memorial as well as the Air Force Memorial, which was also an honor. Overall, it was such a rewarding and unforgettable experience. For senior Ethan Recker, who plays the mellophone and the French horn, he was able to share the memories with his sophomore brother Owen Recker and his father Tony, who was a chaperone. It was extremely fun being down there and seeing the sights, as well as exploring the Smithsonian with our free time one day. It felt great being able to spend that time with other band members. I have to say one of my most favorite parts about the trip had to be the museums and the Capitol. There was just so much to see. I wish I could have had more time to look at them instead of the small time allowed. Having my father on the trip was both positive and negative. Sure, it annoyed me with him being there sometimes, but it was also nice having him there in case I needed his help. I would much rather have him on the trip than without. For Tony Recker, he loved the perspective of the veterans and the people admiring the monuments that also enjoyed the band's music. They, the veterans, were very pleased. They would sit and tap their feet. It was very emotional for them, and it was symbolic at the same time, Tony Recker said. I thought seeing the Vietnam Memorial and the Korean War Memorial was awesome. It was the first time I'd seen those in the dark, and the Lincoln Memorial in the dark is pretty powerful. It's emotional when you hear them play inside Dodger Stadium, but seeing them stand in historic places was powerful. Orchestra director Brian Robeson made the trip with 14 orchestra students. The students had the unique experience of performing at the Air Force Memorial on Veterans Day, Robeson said. The trip was great for the students because they got to experience our country's capital at one of the most patriotic times of the year. I believe that the trip has given our students a deeper understanding and appreciation for our veterans and the values which our country holds on to. With some time to reflect on the trip, Meyer was also able to realize how much of an impact Washington, D.C. made on him. Being in D.C. and seeing all those memorials really makes you feel more real to you, makes it feel more real. All these people have gone and fought for the freedoms of our country. It was amazing to be able to be in such an important place on Veterans Day, where we could really honor all the veterans, past and living, for what they've done for us. And there is another picture on this page with the senior high band looking all regal, standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial before the Parade of Heroes performance. Looks pretty awesome. Okay, third story. A legacy of giving back. Eagle Grove benefits from Johnson's generosity. And as I said, this first ran in the hometown pride. James Johnson may not be a familiar name to everyone in Eagle Grove. He never married, Dick Callahan said. He had very little family left. If you asked about his friends, he didn't have many. A lot of his friends were gone and are gone. But through a trust left by Johnson, the community continues to benefit from the man's kindness. Johnson was a U.S. Navy veteran. He was also a longtime electrical engineer. Dick Cahalan and Kevin Cahalan were Johnson's neighbors for 10 years. They helped take care of whatever he needed up to his final days. "That's what neighbors do," said Dick Cahalan, who had been in Eagle Grove since 1967. It does show a picture of Dick helping his granddaughter, Madeline, out of the Eagle Grove Fire Department's new aerial ladder truck. And this Dick Cahalan is the James Johnson Foundation executor. So, continuing. Johnson died in April of 2017 when he was 88. Before he died, he instructed the Cahalans to use his wealth to help others. When it came time to do his will, he really wanted to make sure the elderly, children, and disadvantaged people were taken care of. Since 2017, charitable donations by the James R. Johnson Foundation have helped the Eagle Grove Boy Scout Troop 1059, Eagle Grove Community Schools, Iowa Specialty Hospital, and the Eagle Grove Fire Department, among other organizations. About $220,000 was given to the Wright County Fair Board for a new stage. The old stage got blown over a couple years ago during a big storm, Kevin Cahalan said. That was our first big contribution. A total of $300,000 has been given so far. According to Dick Cahalan, Johnson was very interested in the field of science. And as a result, while he was still living, he funded a scholarship for Eagle Grove High School students pursuing careers in science and engineering. Johnson also helped fund a digital clock used in the track and field. Rick Dawson leads the Eagle Grove Boy Scout troop. He's been involved with Boy Scouts for 18 years. Dawson is grateful for what Johnson has provided for the Scouts. "It's a huge opportunity for the Scouts," Dawson said. "We use some of the money to go camp for Railroad Merit Badges, equipment, and trailer." Dawson said there are 20 Scouts in his troop and a total of 33 Cub Scouts in the program. "He gets those boys out and moving," said Dick Cahalan. "We do a lot of recycling," Dawson said. "There's a sense of pride in helping them and watching them grow up. We have 4 Scouts working on Eagle Scout projects just to see them go through the whole program. Some of their Eagle Scout projects help the community. One of those projects is recycling bins for retired American flags. We have a trailer here in town for a drop-off site, a recycled area, and we empty the trailer and sort them." Tom Peterson, the Eagle Grove Fire Chief, has an appreciation for Johnson's kindness. "It helps us with equipment," Peterson said. "We are on a limited budget, so any contribution helps." Eagle Wings Daycare has been another recipient. Jennifer Schnell, the assistant director, said the money's been used for building improvements, new toys, and cots. "It's made an overall impact on the center," Schnell said. "The kids have enjoyed having new toys in their rooms." A new washer and dryer were also made possible by the funds. "The daycare is essential for the community," said Dick Cahalan. "The ability to take care of and help grow early childhood education, Snell said. It's a safe place for parents to drop their kids off. We plan, we use curriculum. The kids learn new things every day. The women that work here put their heart into it. For the Cahillans, it's an honor to help worthwhile projects or organizations in the memory of Johnson. It's gratifying to be able to help. Kevin Cahillan added, we've always been in a position where we volunteered our time, but never where we can volunteer money for people who deserve it. It's a nice article this time of year. Okay, we're on to page 2. There's many pictures, and it says Santa and his whirly bird. Jolly old fellow flies in for Manson's hometown Christmas. And then there's 3 pictures. One's of the helicopter landing. Santa ditched his sleigh Sunday and flew into Manson via helicopter for the hometown Christmas event. A Life Flight 2 helicopter from Fort Dodge, piloted by Kyle Jensen, donated its services. And then there's shows Santa exiting the helicopter and waving to the crowd as he arrived. And then there's a close-up of Santa among the children swarming around him, landing on the soccer field near the community center. And then there's a couple of them, more pictures of children. One is Carlisle McKean, and he's making a Christmas ornament using puzzle pieces in the library during that time. And Hazy Slauson, age 10, of Pomeroy, is decorating a sugar cookie at the Lions Club table Sunday afternoon. So they must have had a great day, and it was great weather. They probably had a really, really good day. All right, this date in history. Well, from 2004, we have a picture of Shadrick Smith helping Pete and Brenda Peterson as the couple buys a guitar for their grandson. Smith is still an active musician with several albums to his credit. The poll question this week is, will you attend a Christmas concert this season? And you can answer at www.messengernews.net and find that answer on Sunday. And in history, on Monday, December 19th, the 343rd day, which means there's 22 days left. Whew! So on December 9th in 1990, Solidarity founder Lech Walesa won Poland's presidential runoff by a landslide. In 1608, English poet John Milton was born in London. In 1960, the Domino's pizza chain had its beginnings as brothers Tom and James Monaghan started operating a pizzeria in Ypsilanti, Michigan. In 1962, the Petrified Forest in Arizona was designated as a national park. In 1984, the 5-day-old hijacking of a Kuwait jetliner that claimed the lives of 2 Americans ended as Iranian security men seized control of the plane, which was parked at the Tehran airport. In 1992, Britain's Prince Charles and Princess Diana announced their separation. In 2000, the U.S. Supreme Court ordered a temporary halt in the Florida vote count on which Al Gore pinned his hopes for winning the White House. In 2013, scientists revealed that NASA's Curiosity rover had uncovered signs of an ancient freshwater lake on Mars. 10 years ago, 5 young American Muslims were arrested in Pakistan over possible links to terrorism. Iran claimed that a newly built UN station to detect nuclear explosions was built near its border to give the West a post to spy on the country. 5 years ago, Britain's Prince William and his wife Kate paid a solemn, rain-drenched visit to the National September 11th Memorial and Museum as they wrapped up their first visit to New York. Marianne Mobley Collins, former Miss America, died in Beverly Hills at the age of 77. 1 year ago, a massive storm brought snow, sleet, and freezing rain across a wide swath of the South, cutting power to hundreds of thousands. Melvin Dummer, the former Utah gas station owner who claimed that billionaire Howard Hughes had left him $156 million for rescuing him on a desert road, died in Nevada at the age of 74. courts had determined that he lied and that he will, that the will in which he was named as a beneficiary was a fake. And today's thought is from B.F. Skinner, an American behaviorist who lived from 1904 to 1990. And this is his thought. The real question is not whether machines think, but whether men do. The mystery which surrounds a thinking machine already surrounds a thinking man. Well, I wonder if the artificial reality people would agree with that today. Not sure. Not sure. All right. Our calendar for Monday. It's Monday, which means the Rotary Club is meeting at Willow Ridge today at 11:45 a.m. The Humboldt Dakota City Noon Kiwanis will meet at noon at Vinny's Barbecue. The Al-Anon Non-Smoking Club in Fort Dodge will meet at noon at the First United Methodist Church on North 10th. There will be an AA Al-Anon Club at noon and 7 at 12 North 7th. Holiday on Central, 5 to 6:30 p.m. at the Fort Dodge Public Library. All Addictions Anonymous in Webster City from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. at their Trinity Youth Lutheran Church. The weekly Lion's Den Dance will be occurring on Expo Drive at the former Isaac Walton Lodge from 6 to 9 with a variety of music. Please bring your own beverage and a snack and a $5 donation if you can. Bingo tonight at the Fort Museum and Frontier Village in the Opera House. Doors open at 5 and early birds at 6:30. Fort Dodge Duplicate Bridge will be playing at 6:30 p.m. at Citizen Central. Fort Dodge Choral Society will practice from 7:30 to 9:30 at Grace Lutheran Church on South 9th. There is an AA open meeting in Manson at St. Thomas Catholic Church tonight at 7:30. There is an NA Young People's Group in the Humboldt County Courthouse in Dakota City at 8 p.m. There is another picture here of, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 10 4-H'ers who took part in a Chicago awards trip. Oh, yeah, 10 Webster County 4-H'ers recently went on the Chicago awards trip. They explored many places, including Willis Tower, Lincoln Park Zoo, the Museum of Science and Industry. Of course, they shopped on the Magnificent Mile. They attended the Comedy Sports, saw the Blue Man Group, and visited the Bean. Through their exploration of Chicago, 4-H'ers practiced life skills related to independence, decision-making, and teamwork. Pictured in the front row, left to right are Jaden Condon, Casey Bittleman, Abby Chalstrom, Avery Anderson, Christine Huskin, Morgan Farnham. Back row, Nathan Rethwish, Blake Peterson, Sam Sitzma, and Kylie Wieland. But that was fun. The editorial today. China is biggest climate change culprit. The biggest polluter isn't being held accountable. Do we really want to be remembered as a generation that buried its head in the sand and that fiddled while our planet burned? Asked UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres recently. He was addressing representatives from nearly 200 nations gathered in Spain for a meeting on climate change. Perhaps Guterres should be talking to the world's most egregious polluters, the Chinese. While the United States, often singled out as climate change enemy number one, have been cutting carbon emissions, Beijing has been increasing them. Between 2000 and 2018, U.S. emissions of carbon dioxide decreased about 14%. Similar reductions were recorded for other greenhouse gases. During the same period, Chinese carbon emissions tripled, according to the Associated Press. And while the United States has slashed its consumption of coal, China use continues to go up year by year. It now burns half of the coal produced in mines throughout the world. Are the Chinese being held accountable in any way? No. They were signatories to the infamous Paris Accords on climate change, from which the United States is in the process of withdrawing. But while this country was to be held to strict limits, based on carbon emissions, China's commitment was virtually voluntary. But at least the Chinese are trying, right? Wrong. While investments in coal-burning industries are increasing, there, those in renewable energy are being cut back. It is no secret that China and the United States are involved in a tariff battle over the former country's unfair trade practices. Beijing had hoped to capitalize on them as an economic competitor against our nation. Holding U.S. industries to severe carbon emissions while leaving those in China with a free hand clearly was another part of Beijing's strategy. Until Guterres and others who worry about climate change are willing to take on the world's leading culprit, it is they, not Americans, who will be viewed as those who fiddled while the planet burned. Okie doke. I see here there's a little headline that former Iowa Congressman Berkeley Bedell has died. Many of us remember that name. Now we'll move to some school news. It is a Monday, which means it's Character Counts Day. And we have two youths showcased, Anna Song, daughter of Young Jiang Oh and Sung Ki Son, is the second grader at St. Edmund's. She is nominated by Mrs. Streit, who writes, Anna is very attentive and helpful in class. She is willing to help others and includes her classmates if someone needs someone to play with. She tries her best in class and doesn't give up even if something is challenging. Anna always has a beautiful smile to share. The next is Hadley Whitmore, daughter of Brian and Kimberly Whitmore of Fort Dodge, is a kindergarten at St. Edmund's. She was nominated by Mrs. Prelip, who writes, Hadley is kind to her peers and respectful to her teachers. She is a responsible student and takes learning seriously. She is always willing to help others and shows caring and compassion in all she does. Hadley is an excellent role model. And those six pillars, trustworthiness, respect, responsibility, fairness, caring, and citizenship. Here's an announcement from CCS about a Christmas cantata. Community Christian School will present Child of Promise, a mini cantata on Thursday at 1 p.m. and 6 p.m. in the school chapel. Kindergarten through 8th grade students will perform a 30-minute program of 9 songs that anticipate the birth of Christ, welcome the Christ child, and praise the newborn Savior. There will also be student instrumental performances prior to the cantata. The program is free and open to the public. Community Christian School is located at 2406 9th and a Half Avenue South in Fort Dodge, and you can call the school if you need more information at 573-3011. The St. Edmund names its December kind students. The St. Edmund definition of being kind is someone who makes another feel cared for, included, and encouraged. Each month during the school year, the middle school teachers will select 2 students who show these qualities. The December kind students selected by the staff for being kind this month are 8th graders Reese Lemberg and J.T. Loffensweiler, 7th graders Cambry Lunn and Luke Royster, and 6th graders Ella Passa and Gunnar Elvenhole. Okay. I think that's it for our school news. We're almost ready for sports. There's lots of sports news today. Kind of crazy. But we'll move to the obituaries first. But first, let me remind you that you are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. The Messenger can be heard daily at 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. If you have any questions or comments about our program or any other IRIS program, you can give us a call at 515-243-6833. And we will turn now to the obituaries. The first one is Richard A. Dick Holst, 73 of Fort Dodge, died Sunday, December 8th, at Unity Point Trinity Regional Medical Center. Arrangements have been entrusted to Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Kay Larson, age 81 of Fort Dodge, died Saturday, December 7th, at Unity Point Trinity Medical Center, and arrangements are entrusted to the Gunderson Funeral Home. From Rockwell City, Harold Huebner, 95, passed away Sunday, December 8th at Fort Dodge Health and Rehab. Fort Dodge funeral services are pending at the Palmer and Swank Funeral Home in Rockwell City. Daryl Frederick Greep, age 94, formerly of Fort Dodge, died December 4th, 2019, at Leisure World, Seal Beach, California. Family and friends will gather for memorial service in the spring of 2020 in Des Moines. Ruth Olmsted, age 70 of Fort Dodge, passed away Saturday, December 8th at Trinity Regional Medical Center, and Laufensweiler Sievers is serving the family. And then from their announcement section, today, Joseph E. Lang, age 80, that funeral service will be today at 11 a.m. at Corpus Christi Church. And then the services for Ruth A. Olmsted are pending. Okay, sports. Lots of Triton news, bowl news. So let's get started. The Tritons won the national rugby title. Iowa Central knocks off Western Michigan to win the DIAA championship. And there's a big picture of them all throwing confetti in the air by their bus. And they were in Charlotte, North Carolina to do this. Brent Nelson has built the Iowa Central rugby program from the ground up, and 5 years later, it has come full circle. The Tritons claimed the DIAA national championship on Sunday with a 34-21 win over Western Michigan. "I'm so proud of them for what they accomplished," Nelson said. "Having been an athlete at one point, I remember what it's like to be that age and having everything in front of you. I never tasted what they tasted on Sunday, all the late nights, long hours, and road trips. The little things that you have to do to make a program work, it's all worth it." 2015 was the first year of Triton rugby. Nelson had one recruit and built the rest of the team on campus. The Tritons won. Just a minute here. The Tritons. I think there's a little typo here. Oh, here. The Tritons won the small school championship 2 years later. Iowa Central had a tough road this season as they were forced to move up a division midway through the year, but it capped off with the national title. "They've been through a lot politically, and we've gotten behind them as coaches and pushed them," Nelson said. "They got down here and took care of business. Elijah Hayes, Greg Corley, Reese Smith, and Alec Johnson all scored tries for the Tritons. Smith was 4-for-6 on penalty kicks, and the Tritons were 2-for-4 on conversions. We brought in a lot of kids, and there is a tendency to split," Nelson said. "We had some struggles early, but after that, we came together and got through it just like any other family. They came together for one common goal, and that's what gets you through the rough patches." Coach Kevin Twaite, Iowa Central Athletic Director, talks about being better husbands, sons, and fathers and give these young kids the opportunity to grow as young men. "They've been involved in the community, and it's so important with the growth. Fort Dodge has come into its own and gotten behind rugby, and they've been supportive of us, and so we love to give a little bit back. It's so worth it." Nelson believes that it takes a strong structure and backing, there's a typo, to build a championship team. "I want to thank our two-year players for sticking together and being great leaders and human beings," Nelson said. "Their leadership has brought the team together and put the young kids on their back. They've stepped up in their leadership roles, and these freshmen will be there to do it again next year. I couldn't have done this without our coaching staff. Our volunteer coaches spent their own money to fly out because they feel the sense of family that's part of our culture for our rugby program. It's also important to have Iowa Central behind this program and the administration has been with us since day one. And then there's another picture of them holding their banner on that field. And the Iowa Central are champs in football. There's a picture of Dijon Irons trying to avoid a tackle during the Graphic Edge Bowl at the Unidome, where the Tritons won that game 31-28 in overtime. Colin Swigman gave himself plenty of time before Sunday's Graphic Edge Bowl to get familiar with the Unidome and its surroundings. Swigman, Iowa Central's freshman kicker, knocked through the game-winning field goal in overtime as the Tritons claimed a 31-28 victory over number 19 Nassau. The victory set off a wild celebration as Iowa Central, with a 7-6 overall record, won for the second consecutive year here in the and ninth overall. Warming up with Tristan Waugh and Chance Gibbons, everything was perfect, and I knew we would have the best special teams performance, Swigman said. The kick felt good, and it was really special making the game-winning kick here in a bowl game for Iowa Central. Coming into the game, Swigman was 8 for 13 on field goals, but had dealt with issues as the Tritons prepared for the Lions. It's been a rough couple of weeks, Swigman said, who was also a perfect 4 for 4 on extra points, but I had to put this on for the team. Special teams can make a big difference in games like this, and the extra time is all worth it. Jesse Montalto, Iowa Central's second-year head coach, never lost confidence in Swigman. The former Ellsworth head coach has now won 6 consecutive bowls. He's been big for us all year, and he was nails on Sunday, Montalto said. I've been on him hard the last couple weeks, but he came through big. We trusted him to make the kick. The Triton defense came up big in overtime, after allowing a touchdown by Nassau in the final seconds. Thanks to the play of the game defensive MVP Daquan Cross, Marquise Burks, and Nathan Proctor, Iowa Central forced a turnover on downs to get the ball back for the offense. Both Burks and Proctor had 2 sacks each. We talked Saturday night about the defense, and all needed to play for each other and make it happen. These situations are nothing new to us. We just strapped up and anchored down. It feels great to win a bowl game 2 times in a row. DJ Irons, who earned the offensive MVP award for the game, completed 17 of 30 passes for 315 yards and 4 touchdowns. Irons, who missed the season finale due to a concussion, hit Terrell Carey for 2 scores and Tenarius Aiken for another. We never gave up, and I love our coaches for that, Irons said. We went through a rough part in the game, but they trusted us to come out on top. We fought for each other and said that we were only the ones who could beat us. I've just been blessed to do this. I have to give my praise to God, my family, my teammates, the coaches, and Iowa Central for giving me this opportunity. Jaden Washington ran for 59 yards, Irons added 43, and Grant Walker picked up 36 key runs late in the fourth and overtime to set up scoring drives. Carey finished with 85 yards, receiving Christian Ford, and Christian Ford had 5 catches for 67 yards, and Aiken hauled in 4 passes for 60. We've played so many close games this year and came out with a loss. It was good to come out ahead, Montalto said. DJ made some incredible plays, just like he has all year. We asked our defense to step up, and that is what they did. All right. So that's a great, great, great accomplishment for them. Okay. Now, let's talk about bowl games, shall we? Everybody always waits for that news. So Iowa is going to the Holiday Bowl, and they are going to face number 4 USC. And that will be on December 27th in San Diego at 7 p.m. It's called the Union Holiday Bowl. And, of course, it will be televised on FS1 for all of it. And this is the Hawkeyes' 33rd bowl. The fourth Holiday Bowl appearance and the first since 1991. Iowa has a record of 2-0-1 all time in the Holiday Bowl. They've defeated San Diego State, Wyoming, and Brigham Young, tying with Brigham Young. But the Hawkeyes are 2-7 against USC. They did beat the Trojans in 1950 and 61. So there we have it. The Hawkeyes ranked third among the Big Team 10 teams in bowl appearances, and was bowl eligible for the 18th time under Kirk Ferentz. But it has a record of 8-8 in bowl games. So this will be interesting. All right. That is courtesy of Hawkeye Sports, of course. Now Iowa State will meet Notre Dame, who's ranked number 14 in the Camping World Bowl. And that will be in Orlando, Florida. They will play in a bowl game for the third straight season and the 15th time in school history. They will, like I say, they will face number 14 ranked Irish, who have a 10-2 record. And that will be December 28th at 11 o'clock in the morning on ABC. And it marks the second time in school history that Iowa State has made bowl games three consecutive times in a row. And so that's going to be exciting. Notre Dame will be playing its second Camping World Bowl experience. So I'm not going to read the whole article, but that's... But just a couple notes, Notre Dame's top player, quarterback Ian Book, ranked sixth nationally with 33 touchdown passes, and Iowa State's Brock Purdy ranks fourth nationally in passing yards with 27 touchdown passes. So there is going to be a quarterback matchup right there. How about that? All right. So let's see, we have some sports roundup. And that is that the Fort Dodge swim team is competing in Boone, or they competed in Boone on Saturday at the 58th annual Toreador Relays. The Dodgers earned a handful of medals, with Austin Jorgensen claiming two. Jorgensen and Kevin O'Connor were third in the medley relay with a time of 5 minutes 81 seconds. Jorgensen also paired up with Colby Doble to place third in the 50 back relay. Kaiser Stanley and Ryan Pineda finished the 50 free relay in 2 minutes 202 to place third. The guys did a great job, Fort Dodge Senior High head coach Ashley Beaumont said. It was awesome having three new swimmers in Kevin Colby and Ryan medal at their first invite. The invite features all relays, including several two-man events. Fort Dodge returns to the pool on Thursday when they host Spencer and Marshalltown. I didn't even know there were two-man events. That's kind of cool. Youth wrestling. The Fort Dodge Youth Wrestling Tourney will be Friday, December 20th in the Dodger Gym. The event has five divisions. Oh, my. Super Pee-wee, which is pre-K and kindergarten. Pee-wee, which is grades 1 and 2. Bantam, which is grades 3 and 4, junior grades 5 and 6, and senior grades 7 and 8. The cost is $50 online or $40 at the door. Weigh-ins are from 4 to 5, with wrestling immediately following. First through fourth places will receive awards. Adult admission is $5 and $3 for kids. An online registration form is available at www.trackwrestling.com. Or you can call Bobby Thompson at 515-408-3443 or at bthompson@fdschools.org or Tanner Utley at tannerutley@gmail.com or 515-570-4032. All right. I bet that's interesting to see those little kids wrestle. Hot corner today. Remember, it's December 9th, 2019 today. So, excuse me. In 1982, the Los Angeles Kings snapped Wayne Gretzky's National Hockey League record 30-game point streak, Rookie goaltender Gary Laskowski made 32 saves to lead the Kings to a 3-3 tie with the Edmonton Oilers. 1995, Eddie George, who led the nation with 24 touchdowns and rushed for an Ohio State record of 1,826 yards, wins the Heisman by a wide margin over Nebraska's Tommy Frazier. In year 2000, Dallas Cowboys running back Emmitt Smith rushes for a season-high 150 yards, putting him over the 1,000 mark for a record-tying 10th straight season, joining Walter Payton and Barry Sanders as the only players in the NFL history with 15,000 career yards. In 2007, Tom Brady throws 4 touchdown passes as the New England Patriots stay unbeaten 34-13 over the Steelers. 2017, Oklahoma quarterback Baker Mayfield wins the Heisman, completing a climb from a walk-on to one of the most accomplished players in the history of college football. In 2017, Josie Altidore opens the scoring in the 67th minute, and Toronto FC beats Seattle Sounders 2-0 in the MLS Cup to become the first Canadian champion in league history. I think that's hockey, I would assume. All right. Today on TV, you can watch Minnesota play basketball at Iowa in men's college basketball at 7 o'clock on the Big Ten Network. In the NBA, you can watch Orlando play Milwaukee at 7 p.m. on the NBA Network. In football, you can watch the New York Giants at Philadelphia at 7:15 p.m. on ESPN. Hockey, Columbus at Washington at 6 p.m. on the Hockey Channel. Even rodeo today, PRCA National Finals at 9 o'clock on CBS Sports Network. And then soccer. Arsenal at West Ham, 1:55 p.m. this afternoon, NBC Sports Network. And then a quote from the at Iowa Central quarterback, "The kick felt good and it was really special making the game-winning kick here in a bowl game for Iowa Central." But I don't think that's the quarterback saying that. I think that was the kicker saying that. So I think there's another typo there maybe. Of course, if you're a Chiefs fan, you watch them beat Tom Brady yesterday, which was a very, very interesting called game, in my opinion. All right. And I think that is close to being it for our Monday paper. So, with a little time left, I thought maybe we would just look at a story from the Country magazine this month. Sometimes I don't always bring the country, but here's a picture of a kid on a horse, age 9, on this horse named Babe. And the story says, "Old Babe Sleigh Bells. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer would be proud of this trusted horse on her wintry trek." This comes to us out of Paul's Valley, Oklahoma. A story written by Larry Boone. "About 50 years ago, my grandpa had a farm work horse named Babe. At the holidays, old Babe would let all of the cousins and grandkids ride her around for fun. One day, after many years, old Babe helping to plow the fields, grandpa got a tractor. It wasn't long before old Babe found herself spending more time in the barn and less time in the fields. Summer and fall came and went. For weeks, grandpa prepared the farm for cold weather, and soon Christmas was just around the corner. We always celebrated our holidays at the farm, and so my grandparents planned to go into town for supplies. Snow fell early that morning, and by afternoon, everything was covered in a pure white blanket. Grandpa wanted to take the truck parked next to Babe's manger into town, but the frigid weather was too much, and it wouldn't start. He uncovered that dusty old sleigh they had used years ago when Babe was young, asking, 'Well, girl, do you think you can still give it a pull?' Before long, the sleigh was clean and old Babe was harnessed up and ready to go. My grandparents and their dog, Rusty, climbed into the sleigh and headed into town. Babe pulled them across the creek and through the woods for about an hour until they reached the little country store. They bought food and holiday supplies, loaded the sleigh, covered themselves with one of Grandma's handmade quilts, and headed back to the farm. It was dark now, and the snow was deeper. Old Babe pulled hard on the sleigh, the wind blowing into her face. Before long, the night was so dark, and the snow was falling so hard, they couldn't see where they were going, but they could hear the sleigh bells on Old Babe's harness. The journey seemed to last forever, but finally a light appeared. My grandparents sighed in relief that Old Babe knew the way home. As Grandpa removed the harness from Babe's neck, the look of a young horse shone in her eyes. He gave her a bucket of fresh oats and thanked her for getting them back safely. He never forgot the sound of those sleigh bells that had reassured him during the long, cold journey home that night. For many years, Grandma retold the story of the ride in Old Babe's sleigh bells and how they reminded them about Christmas and the importance of family and home. So whenever you hear a sleigh bell, remember that Christmas is around the corner and someone you can depend on is waiting in a manger. How's that? That's a nice story. A little twist on the end there. A little twist on the end. Okay, we'll see if there's another little Christmas story here. Let's see. That one's kind of long. This is about the first snowfall. Crunch, crunch, crunch is the only sound I hear as I put each foot down on top of fresh snow that covers the ground. The air is biting cold and still, and the snow seems to absorb all the usual noises. It snowed during the night, and we awaken to a beautiful, picturesque white wonderland with crystal ice flecks sparkling on the snow's surface. I love to take walks soon after the first snow when it lies fresh and pristine over open fields, trees, and roads. I remember the excitement I felt as a child waking up to see thick snow covering the ground and flocking the branches on the evergreens. I planned the day at the very moment I joined my friends for several glorious hours of sliding down the long slope on our neighbor's front lawn. All the kids would be on that slope until our parents called us in at sunset. As I grew a few years older and wiser, I realized our neighbor's hill wasn't so long and steep after all. So I ventured out to a nearby golf course, dotted with rolling hills, valleys, and a large pond that froze over to thick ice. My siblings, friends, and I spent hours racing down those long runs on our sleds and skis. The refrozen ice chunks on the pond surface slowed down the sleds, and we laughed and shouted out the distance as we slid across that pond. My snow pants, coat, hat, mittens were 100% wool. High-tech clothing was not available in the mid-40s. So after long hours of play, white balls of snow clung to each piece of clothing like Velcro, like the Velcro that would be invented soon. Yep, the first snowfall is magical and always brings back joyful memories. Okay. This particular issue is filled with lots of pictures. And boy, if some of you were ever familiar with the Country Magazine, they always hide a needle, and it was very difficult to find this month. I'm a-looking here for a little short story. This one's about a guardian angel. A gentle dog and the wonders of pet therapy bring joy to children and patients alike. This comes out of California, and it shows a picture of this dog with her head bowed. The dog's name is Angel, and she has her head bowed, and it says she prays until Jill's husband Jack says amen. She even crosses her paws. 20 years ago, I became involved in pet therapy. After our first golden retriever, JJ, passed away, we got another retriever puppy who we named JJ's Angel. As she matured and went through obedience training, we realized that she, too, would be a good therapy dog. Angel is 10 now and works every week. She visits two hospitals, a daycare for the elderly, and our library for the Pause for Reading program. At the library, 6 to 10 dogs lie on the floor, and kids pick out a book and read to a dog. After they finish, they get a trading card with the dog's picture in history. Angel has also helped out at a children's special needs church camp. She is so popular that everywhere we go, people recognize her, especially the kids who have read to her. We have seen some very special things happen through pet therapy. I brought Angel to our local hospital to visit a woman who was completely paralyzed on her right side from a stroke. We spent time with her every week. One day, my husband, Jack, got Angel up into the chair next to the woman's bed. He asked her if she wanted to give Angel a treat. She nodded yes, and Jack carefully placed the treat in her right hand. Angel gently took the treat out of her hand. Then the woman raised her right hand and started petting Angel. Her friend was in the room and said, "She hasn't been able to move that hand since she had her stroke." After that, every time we saw the woman, she lifted her left hand. We told her she had to use her right hand, and she did. When Angel visits the hospital, she also performs tricks for patients. We taught her how to say a prayer. She crouches on the floor, bows her head, and crosses her paws. She stays very still and doesn't move until Jack says, "Amen," and clasps her hands. Our 15-year-old grandson David helps us out at the hospital to earn volunteer credits when he's not in school. After visiting, he says, "It's so neat to see how happy Angel makes the patients," and I respond, "That is why we do it." And let me tell you, this little dog is that's a precious picture of that little dog. Special, special times they bring us. Okay. That brings us to the end of our reading today at the Fort Dodge Messenger. We thank you for listening with IRIS, the Iowa Reading Information Service for the Blind. And we will recap the weather for you today before we sign off. Let's see. Today, of course, we said snow is likely with a high of 28, low of 8, winds northwest 10 to 15. So I think we're going to see a little bit of a change as the day progresses. Our sun rise is about 7:30 in the morning, and of course the days are short, and the sun sets at 4:43. Tomorrow, partly sunny, high of only 17 and a low of 6. Wednesday, mostly sunny, high of 20, low of 13. Thursday, partly sunny, keeps climbing, high of 36, low of 24. Friday, mostly cloudy, high of 40, low of 24. Saturday, mostly cloudy, high of 33, low of 15. And Sunday, mostly cloudy, high of 27, low around 13. So, our average for the month, of course, is about, we have had no precipitation this month. Isn't that interesting? And this year we've had 38 inches of precipitation. So with that, we wish you a farewell.